Hi, I'm Danny Gusby, Executive Director of Fathers Resources International.
And I'm Heidi Nabert, President of the National Shared Parenting Association.
And
we're
your
dynamic
divorce duo.
Duo.
Welcome to Divorced Dad Weekly's Q&A session for Divorced Dad Roadmap Special Report, Top 10 Success Strategies for Divorced Dads. So, Heidi, let's get right to the questions we have from our listeners.
Well, we have a question from Doug.
Okay.
In Sylvania. I'm not sure where that is.
Okay.
And he's asking, is there any one type of evidence that should be gathered to prove parental alienation?
Well, first of all, you have to know for sure that what you're dealing with is parental alienation. Is it manipulation that's going on? Is it just misconduct that's going on?
Well, Danny, why don't you just describe parental alienation in the true sense of what it is?
Well, I think a lot of fathers, they use the term parental alienation because it's the only one that they know when they're not being able to see their kids and their kids are giving them a hard time and so on and so forth, that they go, oh, well, yeah, I am being alienated, therefore my kid is suffering from parental alienation syndrome. Parental alienation syndrome is very, very extreme. It's not, you know, light at all. It's not to say that there cannot be stages of it, but when you are getting to the point where a child is alienated, there's a very, very serious problem going on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I want you to picture, for example, that you're trying to have a visit with your child at a supervised access center, and the child is cowering in the corner, despite the fact that there's social workers saying, it's okay, you can talk with your dad, and the child's refusing to talk.
Or they're cowering and shaking in the corner, that's usually an indication of parental alienation syndrome. Now, there's different stages, too, Danny. I mean, this whole process is a type of manipulation that can go on and on and on, and it escalates over time.
Well, it will start as manipulation, and if the manipulation continues on and on and on, unabated for a long time,
mm-hmm.
it can become alienating behavior.
Mm-hmm.
But just because, you know, someone is manipulating doesn't necessarily it's going to become alienating. You know, maybe they're only manipulating under certain circumstances or in certain situations, but it's not across the board.
Mm-hmm. And so,
so for evidence,
what kind of evidence do you need to prove parental alienation?
Well, I would first of all start off with, and in order to prove that there's a problem, you got to first of all prove, okay, is there a court order or an agreement that establishes what's supposed to be going on in terms of visitation, access, parenting time with the children.
Okay. So let's assume that there is something like that in place. So
okay.
You're supposed to see your children, let's say, every other weekend
and
on a Wednesday night.
Then how vigorous have you been every time there's been access denial going on?
Okay. So when you go to the location to pick up the children, are the children basically ready to go, or are you being told, no, they're not here, or no one's home, or if it's a location that where you pick the children up from, that the kids aren't there? I mean, there's any number of scenarios.
Well, it could be any or all of the above. How many times have you got times, dates, witnesses, evidence, corroborated evidence that demonstrates, you know, all this? And then did you take it into court, for example, on a contempt? Did you need police enforcement? Was there a finding of contempt?
What do you mean by contempt, Danny?
Well,
what does that mean?
When there's an order and someone disobeys it, that's a contempt of the court. But in order to, you know...
We're talking about terminology here now.
Yeah, well, contempt of court means there's a court order and you're disobeying it. So
mm-hmm.
the person who has the order in their favor takes that person in on what's known as a contempt hearing, where the court wants to find out, does the person know that the order exists?
Mm-hmm.
What are the reasons for them not complying? And mm-hmm. is there willful noncompliance?
Willful noncompliance.
Yeah, they're choosing to not comply.
So they are deliberately ignoring.
I couldn't have access because the train on the way back from Montreal to Toronto derailed. Therefore, we were late.
Well, that sounds like a legitimate reason.
Well, sure. You know, if it derailed, you're lucky you're still alive. Okay?
Right. Right.
Right. I was on my way and I got a flat tire.
Mm-hmm.
Or there was an accident on the major highway, and that meant I was late.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you could prove all that. Well, that's not willful, okay?
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you can prove willful disobedience, And there's, you know, a number of these willful disobediences that have happened, you know, and they're all logged, dates, times, witnesses.
Mm-hmm.
You know, then you have a strong case for contempt. I think if you've managed to get a contempt finding and it's still going on despite the fact that the court's given you police enforcement, despite the fact there's been a psychological evaluation at that point as to why mom can't obey court orders, then at that point, you know, I think you stand a good chance. If you can bring in a good child psychologist to examine the children,
mm-hmm.
of establishing that there's parental alienation. But understand, it's not going to be just as simple as, well, I've been denied access 55 times, but I can't tell you the dates, I can't tell you the times, I can't tell you, you know, nobody witnessed it, and I just want you to take my word for it, and I believe my children are alienated. That's not going to work.
That's not enough.
No, not even remotely.
So, Danny, when you're going to pick up your children from a location, for example, if
yep.
you take someone with you,
yeah.
so you have a witness, in other words,
yes.
then that person could give a statement
yes.
saying, I went with my friend.
Yes.
Let's say, in this case, Doug, because this is Doug's question. Mm-hmm. I went with my friend Doug. He was picking up his kids at the local donut shop.
Yep.
And the kids never showed. They were supposed to be there at 7. We stayed till 8.
Yep.
And he called a couple of times at the home number, and there was no answer. He was getting worried.
Mm-hmm.
And we waited for another... You know, we waited there for an hour. Eventually, someone did answer the phone, and it was the mom, the ex-wife,
yep.
who basically said, oh, sorry, the kids are busy tonight.
Mm-hmm.
So that type of statement would be something that you could start putting together for evidence in a situation like that.
Right.
Okay. All right. Would a similar scenario apply if... you were with the children, and the child said to the dad, I don't want to see you?
Possibly. It would depend on the context. You know, pitch your dad to punish the child for doing something they shouldn't have done.
Mm-hmm.
And the child says, well, I don't want to see you anymore, in order to try and, you know, manipulate the situation.
Right. And we do see that occasionally where...
Now, what about the child that manipulates the situation because they know that they can run home, go to talk to mom, and that mom's going to stick up for them when,
mm-hmm.
you know, they were punished for something they shouldn't have done, and then they're refusing to come. Now, is that parental alienation? No, that's just
manipulation.
That's just manipulation, and if anything, it's the child manipulating the entire situation. Okay?
Right, exactly. All right, so Doug, I hope that answers your question. If you have any further questions, just type that into the question panel, or
yeah.
again, alternatively, we will be opening up the phone lines if you want to ask additional questions.
Yep.
All right, so the next question is coming from David in Collingwood. He says, second marriage, her with two children. She signed a court document that she didn't want child support. I married her, and after 13 months, moved out. We are getting divorced. I gave her the house and a brand new car. Would the courts consider me a father figure to her children after such a short marital time?
How long?
13 months.
Yeah, you've acted in the place of a parent.
Now, the sense I get from what he's saying here is that she signed a court document saying that she didn't want child support, and I'm wondering if what Dave's saying here is that she said that to her previous partner, or maybe the children, the father of these two children.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, if he's got that documentation or he's aware of that documentation, can he not... in turn, if she's coming after him for support, can he not in turn, you know, say, look, I'd really like to involve the biological father here. He should be paying something here as well.
Well, sure.
Okay.
But that's not going to get him out of a finding that he's acted in the place of a parent. And that's not going to get him out of having to pay something.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
You see, once you've acted in the place of a parent, you're on the hook, okay?
Even after 13 months, Danny?
Well.
That's not a long time.
But whose perspective are you looking at it from, the adults or the child's?
Well, wouldn't it also matter what the age of the children are? I mean, if they're two teenagers, they're not going to see him as a dad.
Well, that still doesn't release him from the obligation.
Mm, okay.
He stepped up to the plate and wanted to act like that,
mm-hmm.
right? And, you know, to try and say, well, you know, yeah, I wanted to marry her, but I didn't want to act like that. I mean, come on, like the whole thing is, you know, part and parcel of a package, you know. If you didn't want the kids, then, you know, why did you, you know, marry the woman?
Right. Okay, we've got another question, a very long question from Dan in Oshawa. He says, hi, guys, I wish you two were doing these webinars 3 years ago, or if you were doing these webinars even back then, I wish I knew about it. Keep up the great work. I think the biggest thing that men don't understand is that what you two are saying can and will happen, and does in fact actually happen. The whole process of becoming knowledgeable is a long and difficult one, but ultimately it is a requirement. You don't get another chance at this. You will spend all your money on lawyers and court. Wow, Dan, that's... you know, thank you for saying all this, because you know what, we can say whatever we're going to say, but here you are, you know, basically confirming that we're right. You go on to say, then you will run out of money before all the matters are dealt with, and then you're on your own. Please inform the listeners to beware of the other side's lawyer who does not submit court endorsements and consent to agreements to the court to make them into court orders.
Endorsements are what the judges write.
Yep.
Yeah.
And then turning them into court orders.
Yeah.
This is particularly problematic in that when you think you have an agreement with mom regarding any access or visitation related issues, only to find out later that you don't have any legal document to enforce it when the mom decides that she no longer wants to abide by your agreement. Well, you know, Dan, you know, that one statement, again, is pretty powerful, you know. Your Honor, can we dispense with approval of the order?
Yeah.
You know, write that down. Write that down. Your Honor, can we dispense with approval of the order? If you hear a lawyer saying that...
I object, Your Honor.
Say immediately, Your Honor, I object. I am therefore requesting approval of the order. And would you kindly include that in your endorsement? You know, this is going to be so important, so that you get an opportunity to see this document before it's turned into a court order.
Now, here's the other thing. I mean, when you have the ability to approve, you got to do it in a timely way. You can't just fool around with it, because there are rules that are in place that if you don't approve the order, that they can, you know, then enter it without your approval, and then that would form the basis and the evidence of that you didn't need to get, you know, approval from now on because you didn't act, okay?
Mm.
Right? So, I mean, don't waste the court's time. Get
right.
the approval so you get the chance, and then act upon it. Don't just fool around.
Right. Danny, we're going to open up the lines. So if you do want to call in, obviously this is only for the live call, not for the replay. Please announce yourself when you come online, and we will answer your question next. All right, just say hello so we know you're there. All right, so next question comes from Jefferson in Windsor, and it is, if the parent is using the children, they are 5, 6, and 7 years old, and they're choosing not to go on the court-ordered visitation, even when they're doing the exchanges at the access center. She's claiming they are fearful to come. We have 5 plus children, age circumstances. So Child Protective Services were involved, and we've also had a custody evaluation done a month ago, who agrees to access. At this time, she has no consequences. So, Danny, what do you say to this?
So, I'm not sure I'm understanding.
He's saying that the mom is using the children, and I guess she's in some way manipulating the kids into saying that they don't want to come on visitation.
Okay.
And they're, you know, supposed to do the exchange at the access center. So.
Okay, so I got to assume then that there's an order in place. Okay, so that's where I was lost. All right, so if there's an order in place, there's an order in place. And if she's not bringing them to the access center like she's supposed to, then you got to take it back into court on a contempt.
So when he says at this time there are no consequences for her for doing this, the next stage, the next consequence would be to go into court on a contempt motion.
Yeah, so you got to bring the evidence. The access center should be able to give you copies of the access reports, and on the access reports is going to say that the mom did not turn up.
Either she didn't turn up, or the kids all said they don't want to see their dad, or whatever the circumstances were. You know, the access center, you know, thankfully they're there to they're your witness, basically, and they would be able to give you reports outlining the specifics of what occurred. And that's the type of evidence that you're going to need to take back into court with you to prove that, you know, there's obviously something going on here that's not correct.
Right.
All right.
So two more questions. So if you're going to phone in, now is the time to do it, because mm-hmm. by the time we get past the next question, I'm going to mute the lines if there's nobody there.
Yep. So if you want to call in, now is the time. Okay, so Dave from Collingwood actually just updated, and he says he was the one that said that his former wife signed a court document saying she didn't want child support from her previous husband. He just confirmed that that is what she signed.
Right.
So I gather she's not receiving any support from him. But if she comes after Dave for support,
he then can go after Dad.
He
can have him at it as a party.
Yeah, I mean, come on, you're. It makes sense, because it's going to be very, very important to add him as a party, seeing how he's the biological father. And you know what? It doesn't matter whether he is seeing the children or not. I'm not clear if that's the case, but you know what? Whether you're seeing the children or not has nothing to do with your obligation when it comes to child support.
Right.
Okay. All right, next question from Shane in Hamilton. He's asking, if you're unsure whether or not your ex-wife is spending her child support on the children, is there a way to ask a judge for a motion that would require her to show proof of what she's spending the money on? You know, example, receipts from groceries or clothing?
This is one of the places that becomes very, very problematic. A lot of judges will roll their eyes and you know, when you start to want accountability. The easiest way to think through accountability when you're looking at it under the child support guidelines here in Ontario is what the purposes of child support are for. That both parents have an obligation to support the children up to the table amount and commensurate with their abilities to be able to, you know, earn income. So there's that. And then the next part is through the financial statement, is looking at the financial statement and does it make sense? So, for example, how many people are living in the house? How much does it cost, you know, in rent, for example, for the apartment or the townhouse or whatever it is? And then take that figure and, you know, start doing the math and compare it to the child support. Do the same thing with the food. Do the same thing with some of the extraordinary expenses. And start looking at that stuff and looking at the numbers and looking at the math behind it. And does it make sense? Or you're looking at it going, well, wait a minute, you know, there's still another $400 or $500 unaccounted for.
Danny, what do you mean by extraordinary expenses?
Well, here in Canada, in Ontario, there are what are known as Section 7 child support guideline expenses. These could be things like medical not covered by a plan, orthodontist, dental, hockey. You know.
So extracurricular activities,
yeah, some,
or
yeah.
or other types of
things that are above and beyond,
lessons like
above and beyond the norm. I mean,
piano lessons, ballet lessons, anything like that.
Right. I mean, if you're spending like $150 a month on piano lessons, or you know, it costs money for the hockey equipment, and you know, then to join the team, and you know, it's costing $2,000 a year.
Now, there's an example, Danny. If you know, if you're spending $150 a month on piano lessons,
yeah.
and yet you you contact the place where the child is getting the lessons from, and you just say, just want to know when the next piano concert's going to be, because they usually have a concert every 6 months. And they say, oh, it's, you know, next month. And then you can just say, well, is my child going to be performing? And then they say, oh, your child's not enrolled. Right? Or something along those lines.
Well,
if you find out all of a sudden that your child hasn't been taking the lessons,
well, the
what do you do in a situation
well, this
like that?
This is what I mean. I mean, you got to take a look at what's sworn in the financial statement.
Mm-hmm.
And does it match up to what's being paid out? You know, for example, here, I'll give you a really easy one, all right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, mom says that she's spending $10 a month on clothing for the children, but she spent $150 a month on booze and cigarettes.
Mm. Right.
You know? So booze and cigarettes are more important than clothing for the children.
Well, obviously.
You know, $150 for booze and cigarettes, and then $200 a month for entertainment.
Yeah.
You know, and then $500 a month for credit cards.
Yeah.
Right? But the kids are getting $20 a month worth of clothing.
Mm. Yeah. Okay.
You know, it could be that simple, okay? But, I mean...
So have another look at the financial statement,
yeah,
if there
I mean,
is one.
Really, I think it comes down to, from my perspective, is here's the way to look at it. There's a table amount for you. So let's say you're both making the same amount of money, for just for example, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And let's say that your amount is $500 a month. Well, then mom's amount, the presumed amount that she's spending is $500 a month. That means there's a combined amount of $1,000 in child support available for the child.
Right.
Now, if you total up the housing, the food, the clothing, and whatever incidentals there are,
mm-hmm.
you know, and it's only coming to, you know, instead of $1,000 a month, it's coming to $600 a month. The question is where's the other $400 going?
Yeah. So, I mean, you may be able to discover some inequities just by studying the financial information that's coming from your ex.
Right.
Okay. All right, we've got Mark from Toronto and Matt from Toronto. So, Mark's got a quick question. Hi, Danny and Heidi. After being served, is it better to respond ASAP, or should I wait till the last minute? All things being equal and all the documentation is complete and in order. So I understand what he's saying, because, you know, often these guys will be served on a Friday and their court date's Monday, right?
Yep.
And then I guess what he's saying is, okay, so I was served. I filled out all my forms. I've got everything ready to go. Should I be sending those responses back just down to the wire? You know, when my 30 days are up, or whatever the time frame is that the court
well,
has requested.
Always, it's always better to be ahead of the curve, but in the initial stages of proceedings, sometimes people even miss the initial 30 days, and you know, then they need in order to extend the time or in order for a late filing or something.
But he's wondering if that strategically makes sense to wait till the last minute, or should he respond?
No,
ASAP?
No, I don't think so. No, if
doesn't
if
make any difference.
The only way I'd say it makes any difference is if you feel you need the extra time in order to not feel rushed and hurried, okay, in your response.
Well, it's never a good idea to delay, okay?
No.
That's for sure. So you want to get your response materials done as soon as possible. And Danny's right. It's always a good idea to let them sit there and, you know, sleep on it a few days.
Yep.
Go back and read it again. If you have a trusted friend, get them to read it. And, you know, one thing you don't want to have in your materials is any kind of, you know, he said, she said stuff. You want it to be very child-friendly. Don't use the terminology, my children. It's our children. It's our son, our daughter, not my daughter, my son, okay? I mean, that may seem like a really minor difference, but it makes a world of difference because judges actually listen for that, and they view you in a totally different way when it's inclusive.
Yep.
So Matt's question is, I think my ex is lying about how much rent she's claiming. Is it double what it should be? It is double what it should be. Can I get the records from the landlord, such as his tax return or with a court order? Is she is his only tenant.
Well, first of all, if it's what are you trying to prove? If you're trying to prove, you know, that she's being irresponsible with child support, you know, possibly, but it's going to be one of these kind of orders. It's going to be kind of it's going to depend on the judge's attitude and how well you're able to articulate the principle that, that you know, I have reason to believe that she's not spending, you know, all the money that she's being given on child support, let alone contributing the share that she's that's presumed in the amount. You know, Your Honor, I'm paying $500 in child support. Her assumed amount under the child support guidelines for what she makes is $200. That's a combined amount of $700 for the child. You know, when I look at the numbers, here's what I come with. There's $350 that seems to be missing.
Okay, I'm a little confused, Danny. He's saying that he thinks his ex is lying about how much rent she's claiming.
Well, I'm assuming where he's going with this is you know, because it has some kind of impact on child support.
Okay, yeah. So in other words,
if it's just I think she's lying about rent. Well, okay. Well, even if she was lying, where do you get to from there?
Mm-hmm.
What does that? Okay, that proves that she's a liar. Okay, so she's a liar. You know, judges are going to assume that people lie about all kinds of things in court. It's what does the lie mean? Where does it get you? Okay, what is the lie connected to?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Right.
You know, no judge is going to assume that everybody is 100% honest all the time. So, and that's not to say that lies don't count in court or that they shouldn't count, you know, or that you're proving that someone is not a very credible person.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But, you know, it's like anything else, it's the magnitude of the lie.
Right. And the thing is, would you get more child support if your rent is higher?
No.
No, it's based on your income.
Right.
So it doesn't matter,
right.
Really, I guess, in the long run. Final question from Jefferson.
Yeah.
He was asking us about the parental alienation syndrome.
Yes.
So he says, thanks for your answer. If there is a true alienating parent, what do you do? It seems the contempt orders don't change the access, especially when the custody evaluation recommends her as a sole custodial parent. As I said, unless she has a consequence for not following the access order, thanks very much for your help.
Well, again, you've got to look at this, that it's any time you go into court, it's going to be a slice-by-slice operation. So, you know, was the assessment order, or the assessment report, was that prior to the contempt's being brought about, you know. Maybe the assessment is out of date. Then when the contempts were brought about, what sort of plan was put before the judge in order for her to purge the contempt? If the only suggestion was that she go to jail or pay a fine, that's never going to happen. You got to be very, very creative with this. Well, Your Honor, I'd like a Section 36 order.
What year? You're going to have to explain
that. Here in Ontario, that means an order of police enforcement for the access. It's not that I want to drag the kids out of the house. I want her to comply with the order. She doesn't comply with the order. The police can go in. They can explain to her that the child or children could be dragged out, but they want her to volunteer her compliance. If she still refuses, then I want the report. I'm going to come back. I'm going to want a psychological evaluation, you know. Plus, as part of the contempt, I want her an order that says that she's to be of good behavior for the next year. Otherwise, you know, I can proceed with the contempt. At that point, if she's still, you know, escalating at that point, you're able to proceed with the contempt and say, listen, now we have a serious material change in circumstances where it may not be appropriate for her to be the custodial parent because she just will not obey court orders. I'd like to have a psychological evaluation to find out what her problem is. You know, court order is a court order. So slice, 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 slice. I mean, I'm not saying that this is the absolute plan. What I'm saying is that you've got to have a semblance of a plan in order to move the thing forward.
Yeah, these are really difficult.
You've got to figure out what the next slices are. I mean, these are general broad strokes that I'm talking about here.
Well, he's saying unless there's a consequence.
But you're the one that has to bring about.
The consequence.
You've got to give the judge options. You can't just say, well, here it is, and now you decide what to do. You've got to ask for the relief. You've got to ask for the specific types of relief.
What kind of relief would you ask for?
Well, in the first instance, I'd be asking for police enforcement.
But you wouldn't really follow through on that, right?
I'd also be asking that the contempt proceedings be stayed on condition that she be of good behavior and no further problems for 1 year. And that I can bring this back on 4 days' notice if there's any further problems, okay?
And let's be clear, Danny, you wouldn't really use police enforcement. You would use the police as a method of trying to negotiate with her.
Right.
Right? That the police call her and say, look, he wants to pick up the kids.
Yeah.
Or, you know, you're supposed to meet him here, get over here.
Right.
We will be writing up a report if you don't.
Yep. His order in itself is enough. We can go over there. We can get these kids. But instead, we're not going to come over and get the kids. We're going to write up a report for the judge so that the judge can see that you're disobeying an order,
right,
and that we asked you to volunteer. And we're going to be witnesses for your husband that we could have yanked out and that he said, no, don't yank the kids out. I want her to volunteer. She didn't volunteer. And when that goes before the judge, you're going to have a very unhappy judge, and you may lose your kids, man. What would you like to do?
So the thing is, first of all, to have the kids dragged out of the house by the police is traumatic for the kids. So that's
right.
Not the place you want to go. What you use a police enforcement for is to gather more evidence. And that, you know, let's face it, you would hope that most people would follow the advice of a police officer that's contacting them and saying, listen, you need to follow the court order.
I would say clearly in 50 to 60% of cases, once you get that police enforcement order, that's going to be the end of your problem, because the other side's going to know that they're going to be a real problem if they disobey at that point.
Mm-hmm. And at the same time, you're gathering some really solid evidence that this is ongoing and that there really is a problem, and that perhaps she really should not be a sole custodial parent.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, that's all the time we have for this installment of Divorce Dad Weekly.
Thanks so much for joining us, and please watch your email for updates and reminders of our next training sessions. Now, to sign up for reminders and our newsletter, be sure to visit our main website at www.fathers-resources.com. The sign-up form is on the homepage in the top right-hand corner. Please go do that now so you won't miss any future training reminders. If you have any comments or feedbacks on tonight's call, we'd love to hear from you.
So that ends our Q&A call for the session. We wish you all success with your challenges this week. Stay strong and focused on your goals. Refuse to be baited by anyone. And remember,
the most important job you'll ever have
is to be a dad.
Thanks so much for listening.
Talk to you next week.